We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you, and we have a really good show. Going to look back at the 38-7 victory over Duke this past weekend. Tar Heels getting what Mac Brown said was the best defensive performance from his team since he returned to be the head coach of the Tar Heels, and that defense really, outside a handful of plays, really smothered Duke all day long and allowed Carolina to pull away from the Blue Devils as that game moved along. 38-7 the final. And, man, we're bringing another, Adam, I think it's another potty consideration interview today, back to back.
I agree.
Pete Chilcutt this past Friday. And Willie Parker on the show today. And Adam, I have to say, surprisingly, and I don't mean that in a negative way towards Willie, I just wasn't quite sure what to expect on this interview, and it's fantastic. He's awesome.
I just hadn't really talked to Willie Parker since he left Carolina.
Sure.
And so, as you said, I wasn't really sure what to expect, but I knew there were perhaps some hurt feelings there, but we resolved all that.
Yeah. Everything's fine now. Yeah. I mean, we just all sat around and hashed it out. Everybody feels great. So I think you're really going to like that. And Willie Parker's really funny. So it was a fun interview.
Also, Willie Parker, jacked.
Yes. If perhaps Willie Parker just wants to get into some contract personal security work, I think he's well positioned to do that. He and Adam arm wrestled a couple of times before and after the show, and I have to say it was pretty even.
He wanted to go best out of three, but I told him we should just walk away with everybody being winners.
Yeah, that's right. It was one of those, though, like when you arm wrestle your kid and like you only use like two fingers and the kid uses his whole body and is pulling you. So, but a win's a win's a win.
That's right.
So that Adam has a list a lot more. So all that coming up. We're brought to you by LS Tractor. And if you remember, LS Tractor is proud to sponsor the Tar Heel rushing attack. LS Tractor commends the powerhouses and workhorses that clear the path and fight for every hard-earned rushing yard. Just like Carolina football's rushing attack, LS Tractor is proud to get your ground game going by offering landowners unparalleled strength, horsepower, and traction with their quality-built and reliable tractors. Learn how you can experience the LS difference and do more for less by visiting the website lstractorusa.com and find a dealer near you. I like how LS Tractor identifies you as a landowner. That makes me feel powerful.
That's what I was just thinking. I was like, wow, I wonder who they're talking to. Oh, that's me.
Yeah.
A landowner.
Yeah, it really does. Makes me feel much more important than I really am. And it's a nice transition into the game because Carolina, while the Tar Heels didn't light the world on fire running the football, they did enough, 135 yards on the ground, which was more than the Blue Devils were able to muster. Now, of course, there was some lost yardage in there because there were five more sacks given up by the Tar Heels, so they ended up losing 43 yards. So you're closer to like 180 in that range for what Carolina actually gained on the ground this past week. But Adam,
that's so dumb.
Yeah, so I like the way the NFL does it. The NFL, yes. It's just, was it team passing yards, I think? Or it's either team passing or team rushing that a sack counts against. Whereas in college, you know, Sam Howell, he rushed for 65 yards in the game, but he's only credited for 29 because the sack yardage goes against his total.
It's not the same thing.
No. Yeah, it is. I don't know why that hasn't changed.
Way we keep him,
yeah,
he had 65 yards rushing.
Much more effective with his legs, and those numbers will tell you. But, Adam, I think it's a nice way to get into the ball game because, to me, there were a couple storylines here. One was Carolina's terrific defensive performance. And, you know, they gave up the 37-yard run on the first play. They gave up the 80-yard touchdown pass on the first play of the second half. And, you know, maybe there are a handful of other plays in there as well for Duke. But for the most part, Carolina just didn't give Duke much opportunity to get moving at all offensively. And this was a good Duke team statistically on offense. Now, as we talked about last week, you know, this was not a team that had played the best of the best in college football leading into this game. But it is a team that had been able to move the football at a decently impressive rate. Carolina, I think after a couple of mistakes early in the run game, really shut that down. Duke tried to use the quick passing game, just those little quick-hitting screens out to the edge to try to force the Tar Heels to tackle in space, which they did well, and a lot of times had multiple guys there. You had the big turnover where Kevin Hester hit Gunnar Holmberg's arm. Trey Morrison alertly picked it up. He was about the only guy on the field that didn't stop, thinking it was an incomplete pass. You know, that obviously is an enormous play in the game. And so the defensive effort is story number one. Story number two, Adam, from the Carolina perspective, was I did think Carolina was a little more patient offensively in this game where they didn't press. They didn't do something silly because it wasn't coming easily the whole time. Now, I think it's easier to do that when you've established a lead and your defense is playing well, and Mack Brown even said, you know, he called the game a little differently as far as some decisions he made. There was one time when Carolina had a 4th-and-2 around midfield. I think we have seen from Mack Brown that he more often than not is going for that. But he didn't in this scenario because he said, look, the defense was playing great, play a little field position. Yeah, so it did change the way that he made some decisions and allowed that Carolina offense to be a little more patient because the defense was playing well. And then finally, offensively, there were some great plays and then some it didn't feel like there was a whole lot in between. There were a couple of big explosive plays, the 75-yard pass to Chandler, the 63-yard touchdown to Downs and some others. But then it also felt like Carolina was in a lot of 2nd-and-11s and 3rd-and-8s and stuff like that where they were having to overcome some negative plays. And you know, Mack Brown said it in the postgame, great play, bad play, great play, bad play. And of course you want to be great play, good play. You want your
not as great plays to still be quality plays, which Carolina struggled with. So all in all, I thought an encouraging performance from Carolina. The offensive line has got to figure out what's going on. They've got to be able to protect Sam Howell better. We'll talk about it on Friday, but Florida State leads the league in sacks. That's not a combo that the Tar Heels want to see right now. So a win, a convincing win, a different type of win than what we've seen from Carolina in the last two seasons under Mack Brown, but a convincing win nonetheless.
Yeah, and I think defensively, you always hear about tackling when it's bad. I thought it was pretty good against Duke, a team that was committed to running the ball and to throwing those short passes. As you said, they're counting on you missing some of those tackles in space, and the Tar Heels, for the most part, didn't really do that, so that was good. Offensively, offensive line is definitely a concern. I think everyone catching the ball other than Josh Downs is a concern because there's so much opportunity there, and it just feels like no one's really taking it. Now, sometimes you go to try to catch the ball and the guy mugs you and no one throws a flag when you're going down the right sideline, hypothetically. But someone of that group has to step up because it's going to become obvious the way you stop Carolina is stop Josh Downs. Now, that being said, he's great no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those plays on Saturday, especially the touchdown, the catch and the run, he just left everybody in a way that you don't often see someone in college do. That was a great play. So I think you got what you needed with an ACC win, a Coastal win, a home win over a team that you're better than, and you came away with some things that still need to get better before you play a team with considerably more talent, if not a better record.
You know, Downs, one thing that was impressive to me was his change of speed, because there were a couple times there was that play, there was another play, I can't remember what it was, but he didn't, it's not like he's going 100 miles an hour the whole time, and even on the play, the long touchdown, it felt like for a little bit of that play, he was kind of gliding down the sideline, and then when he saw the way to where he wanted to go, he kicked it into another gear. And he's just extraordinarily impressive with the ball in his hands in open space. And he made some tough catches, too. You know, he had one over the middle early in the game that converted a third down where he took a big hit, but, you know, popped right back up. And he is undoubtedly Carolina's most effective and most dangerous offensive player right now. And to your point, other teams know this, too. I mean, it will continue to be the onus on Carolina to figure out ways to get him the football, and whether that is line him up in different ways or, you know, whatever it might be, that they've got to continue to figure out ways, and they've done a good job with that. I mean, he has 40 catches through five games, and so that'll be something to keep an eye on as we move forward.
I thought Mack Brown made the good point with you after the game that he did all that while uncharacteristically also having a drop, and shows some maturity coming back and still having that kind of game, because there's some guys who drop a pass and you don't hear from them. You heard plenty from them after that.
I thought, you know, Ty Chandler only ended up with 53 yards rushing, and it wasn't a great day rushing the football for Carolina. I thought Duke did a nice job, you know, getting penetration and having Carolina in second and long and third and long at times. Tar Heels were able to convert some of those long third downs. His two catches, though, were both really important. The 75-yard touchdown on the wheel route, which was a great call. He was wide open. And then he had another gear on that play that we have not seen from him very often. But he ran away from Duke at that after catching the football, stepped through a tackle on a safety that had the angle on him, and made it a touchdown instead of just a big play. And he had another catch on third down, where it was not an easy catch to make out of the backfield. He, you know, in the middle of the field, and it moved the sticks. Carolina eventually scored a touchdown on that drive. And we've talked about this before. You know, Carolina throwing to the running backs was such a big part of the offense a season ago. It has not been as big a part this year to this point. But, man, I thought of everything he did the other day, talking about Ty Chandler, the most impressive thing was what he did catching the football.
And if you're looking for other pass catchers, as we just said the Tar Heels are, maybe that's a portion of the answer. Answer it out of the backfield, because the wheel route, when Sam Howell gave him the pump fake, the entire Duke defense was ready to go intercept that pass.
Right.
The only problem was Ty Chandler was running right past him.
And then Adam, defensively, it was a really impressive day. I thought Carolina, maybe more so than we've seen in recent history, didn't have to bring a whole lot of extra guys to get pressure. I thought they really controlled the defensive or the line of scrimmage, particularly when they were on defense. Miles Murphy continues to play well. Kevin Hester had a big play in this game. The Fox brothers each did some nice things. Kamen Rucker continued to play at a high level. And they were very disruptive up front. They closed up the run gaps. That they did a very nice job up front. Carolina played press man for a large majority of the game, which the Tar Heels have kind of sneakily been doing anyway because they feel like their corners are really good. And then Carolina shuffled the secondary a little bit. And you saw Conley playing at the nickel position, which is what he played last year, which seemed to give him a little more freedom to move around in addition to playing closer to the line of scrimmage in this particular game. Don Chapman, you know, Jay Bateman said on Monday, Chapman played four different positions in this game for Carolina, and including playing some corner against Jake Bobo, who had 34 catches going into the game. So Don Chapman, you know, found a little something there. Cam Kelly played the most that he has played in a game and responded, led the team in tackles, had the nice interception. You know, there were a couple times where he really, you know, was running downhill and helped in the run game. So the Tar Heels shuffled the deck a little bit there on the back end and had some success. So again, something to see as we move forward is how they maneuver that personnel on the back side to go along with everything else. But you know, Mack Brown keeps saying, oh, yeah, there were some really nice things defensively. He said this almost every week. Needs to be more consistent. You know, they did this really. And I thought it was the first time that you got closer to a full 60 minutes of a really impressive performance. And the definition of great defense is different now than it used to be 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever. If you can get off the field on third down, if you can force a turnover or two, if you can force field goals instead of touchdowns, you know, that's great defense now. And Carolina did a lot of those things on Saturday to help them win.
That very easily could have been a shutout defensive
play. Yeah, just it was that one play.
I mean, it was that type of
look, Duke, it's right out of halftime.
We're not ready yet.
Run it up the middle on the first play.
But other than that, I mean, Carolina really didn't even let Duke get close. That was a game where you walked away feeling like that defense controlled the game. And I think Mack Brown used the word settled after the game, talking about the secondary, that maybe the Tar Heels are getting a little more settled back there. It does feel like, even as offensively, it feels like the pieces aren't quite falling into place yet. Defensively, it does feel like players are figuring out what they can and can't do, and so are the coaches, and they're starting to do it.
I mentioned Miles Murphy. He's good.
Yeah.
2.5 tackles for loss, had a sack. He's getting in the backfield at least once a game here, pretty consistently. He's tough. And I'd forgotten, I asked Mack Brown about him yesterday, and I'd just kind of forgotten that he had a hand injury last year. And so not only did he have to go through as a freshman the weird year where he didn't have the prep for the season, all the stuff that we know, but he also had a big wrap on his hand for a large majority of the season. And so for him to have a more normal year of preparation for a season, to be fully healthy, he's a difference maker.
It's so nice to have that physical presence on the line that teams have to game plan for, because when they're worried about him, well, then you got some other guys who can do some things.
And Adam, I do think, and again, Duke is not great, so I don't want to overreact to the game. I think that's more the blueprint on how this Carolina team can win games compared to like the Virginia game, or even where they were obviously more impressive offensively. I think, and that's kind of going into the season what I thought, that the defense was going to continue to get better, and it had to be them that set the tone while Carolina figured things out offensively. Now, you've played five games. You would like to be, I think, a little... I think you would have liked to have figured more out offensively than the Tar Heels have. But I think that's the blueprint to me on how they can be successful, is play a better level defense and a more consistent level defense, find those explosive plays offensively, and just try to continue to get more consistent on that side of the ball, talking about offense, but let your defense do the heavy lifting. Now, is it always going to be as good as it was, you know, 7 points given up? And you know, probably not. But that, to me, is more the style of game that I expected to see from Carolina this year as far as how they would be successful.
I think that's what makes the Georgia Tech game still so head-scratching, because it just felt like things just fell apart in a way defensively that you were not expecting. And I don't think that was characteristic of the 2021 defense when we look back on it by December, but it's still going to be that one outlier that's sitting there, and it's going to be problematic in the ACC and in the Coastal that it is still sitting there.
I mean, Georgia Tech gets smoked by Pitt this past weekend. I mean, the ACC is wide open. I don't think Carolina's out of it. I mean, they're not in great position, don't get me wrong, but I also don't think the Tar Heels are completely out. I mean, there's just too little. No one has grabbed anything. I think Pitt's probably, on the Coastal side, probably done the most, and yet they still have the one really weird loss where they lost to a Western Michigan team at home. So, we'll see.
And Wake on the other side, I mean, who knows?
Right.
Barely squeaked by Louisville, who Louisville might or might not be good. Is NC State really good?
Just hadn't seen them. They beat a Clemson team that's struggling and, you know, got beaten pretty badly on the only road game they've played, so I don't know.
And beat Louisiana Tech by 7.
Yeah.
At home.
I mean, Clemson, I mean, the BC guy dropped, you know, it was a bad, I mean, they had it up to 12. A touchdown wins the game for BC with like 90 seconds left, and they had a bad snap and a dropped snap.
I think that's one thing that works in Carolina's favor, the way the schedule shaped up. Not many things with the schedule, but this one part, you can stay at home the next couple weeks, try to get a couple wins while the rest of the league finally plays some conference games and maybe shakes itself out a little more, and you get a little better understanding of where you stand. And everyone sort of evens out in terms of who and what they've played, because not even right now.
No. Got to get things figured out up front. Got to. I mean, Caden,
offensively.
Yeah. I mean, Caden Baker played center. And I'd say that not as like a something negative towards Caden Baker. He wasn't a center until this past week. He started practicing in the middle of the week at center for the first time. And that just shows you kind of where Carolina is right now, just trying to find the pieces. I think 9 guys played on that offensive line in different combinations until the end of the game, where Carolina, you know, had a wholesale sub there at the end. But I mean, Brian Anderson, Q Johnson, Caden Baker all played at center. Ed Montalus played, William Barnes played, in addition to the other starters. And I mean, Carolina's just trying to find the combination that works. And they've said they're going to keep working Caden Baker at center. And you know, see how he comes along. His dad, I think, was a center. I know he was an offensive lineman for Florida State. Baker's a talented guy, but he's been practicing at tackle. And so it's just the answer isn't easy right now up front. Carolina's trying to figure out where it is with the pieces that it has.
And I don't think you can underestimate what the uncertainty at center does to Sam Howell either. I mean,
right. I think there were some times where Sam Howell pulled it down and tried to run faster than maybe he would have in the past. But can you blame him? Can you blame him for feeling the rush a little bit more right now than I think he has previously?
And Jeff Saturday's talked about that on here before and with you, of course, for the pregame broadcast. I mean, the quarterback's depending on that center. It's like pitchers who have their personal catcher. They just got that guy they feel comfortable with, and there's that comfort level. You know exactly what they'll do. You know the reads they'll make, the calls they'll make. You don't have to wonder if they're thinking the same thing you are. And of course you're wondering right now if the center's always thinking what you are, because the center's different every third drive. So as that hopefully gain some regularity, I think that will also help Sam Howell just be a little more predictable.
So Carolina wins it 38-7. Quick check of the champion of the gridiron, highlighted MVP from the previous game, brought to you by UNC Health. Dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. And we've mentioned, you know, most of the guys here that had significant games. Worth mentioning, you know, Morales with another touchdown at that tight end spot for Carolina. Phil Longo talked about him some on Monday about, you know, how much more physically ready Morales is now to help in the run game, and how in the past, you know, if you brought him in, everybody knew it was probably going to be a pass. And so now you have a little bit more mystery when he's out there, because he has improved in that area. You know, we mentioned Trey Morrison's recovery on the fumble, but it was Kevin Hester who made it happen, got him there and hit the arm of Gunnar Holmberg, and heads up play by Morrison. Mack Brown, I thought this was funny. He said on Monday, Adam, they call it a city ball when there's a fumble and there's a lot of people around. You're supposed to jump on the city ball, just fall on it. But if it's a country ball, when you're out there in the open by yourself, try to pick it up and run. And Trey Morrison had a country ball come his way.
Another guy who continually seems to get limited snaps for good reason, but always seems to show up, Ra-Ra Dilworth.
Yeah.
When he's out there, he's around the ball in a speedy fashion.
Yeah, he and Power Echols each made a nice play at the end of the game when Carolina had substituted some and gone a little deeper in the bench. I mean, there's no doubt the Tar Heels are going to be good on defense, I think, for a while. The personnel's getting better, and you've got some really good young guys. So, exciting to think about. And yet, worth remembering, being, as I said earlier, being great on defense is different now than it was in 1997. It's just different. But you can still be great. It's just great in a different way.
Right.
Okay, Adam, anything else from the game, from the day? Hot day. Carolina played a lot of guys. I thought particularly on the defensive front that played a role. You know, Carolina really substituted freely up there, and it was warm. And that turf's hot. But I think Carolina doesn't mind that. Carolina feels like it's better conditioned than the other team every time. And so they don't mind it being hot, and they feel like their depth's improving, so they don't mind it being hot.
And it was.
Yeah.
Great student section for a noon game. It was full early. I thought the crowd actually might have made a difference, that motion penalty Duke got when they were trying to go for it on fourth down.
There were a couple penalties like that. You know, Duke had some third and fours that became third and nines, or third and sevens that became third and twelves, or something like that, that where they had some key penalties on some motions. And, of course, the fourth down also that you're talking about.
So a lot of times people think you can't have a good crowd at a noon game. That was a good one.
3:30, by the way, both Florida State and Miami. So I like that. 3:30. If I could choose, I would choose 3:30 at home. I think. Maybe. I don't know. Depending on the game, you could also, of course, go 7 or 7:30. But I think 3:30 gets it done.
I think you sprinkle in a night game to give it that feel, but you don't want to overdo it with the night games, because then people start saying, oh, I'm tired of them. But in general, 3:30 gives you a little time to do a little bit of everything.
On the road, let's kick it noon. Go home.
9 a.m.
5:30 in the morning. By the way, no big deal. Josh Downs, ACC Receiver of the Week. Finally did enough to get that award. Congrats, Josh. It's the second time he's been honored this year. But honestly, he could probably have been honored after every single week.
It could just be the Josh Downs Award.
Yeah. I
mean, he's in the national top five in basically everything.
Josh Downs was making it interesting on punt returns. I enjoyed how there was – he had had a couple where it all turned out okay, but like he – and by the way, Duke's punter, really, I thought, punted very well in a game where there were a lot of punts. And, you know, there were a couple times where he, being Josh Downs, tried to field it over his shoulder and then ended up picking it up on a bounce. I liked it. After he finally had decided that, you know, I'm no longer going to try and field these, there was one that bounced at like the 45, and it was slowly bouncing down the field, and I could tell from where I was sitting Josh Downs wanted to pick up that ball. He was just standing there looking at it, and he was like, ooh, I want to pick this ball up. Stupid Duke players in my way, I want to pick it up.
It's funny how much more leeway you give a guy who's returning punts when he's having a great game otherwise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, because it's Josh Downs, like, when he fields the ball running backwards towards the goal line, I'm like, oh, that's Josh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't break that one. But if it's somebody else who doesn't do anything other than return punch, like, everybody knows, put your heels on the 10 and don't field the ball going backwards. But if it's Josh Downs, it's fine. It's Josh Downs.
Hilarious.
Let him do what he wants.
So, Carolina 3-2, 2-2 in the league. And as we mentioned, this is a big three-game stretch. Check the first box. And talented Florida State team coming in. Who knows what they're going to do at quarterback. Both Mackenzie Milton and Jordan Travis have played this year. Jordan Travis played the entire game against Syracuse and was their leading rusher with over 100 yards and threw for two touchdowns. And Carolina had had trouble tackling him a year ago. And Florida State's really good up front defensively, as we said. Lead the league in tackles for loss and sacks. Not what I wanted.
You're not really giving me good vibes as I think about the matchup yet to come. By Friday's show, we'll have figured out how the Tar Heels are going to do this.
Yeah, we'll go in a full breakdown of the Noles coming up on Friday. Okay, Adam, I think it's interview time. Willie Parker. This interview goes all kinds of places. Willie talks about regret. He talks about scoring touchdowns. Talks about his relationship with John Bunning. It's a lot of fun. We really do have a good time with Willie Parker. So we're going to get to that. Come back, bunch of stuff on the backside after this on the Carolina Insider.
Man, you never know.
I'm going to stop you right there, Adam. I'm excited for this interview. I'm just going to tell you that.
Because you never know what's going to happen when you walk into Pod World headquarters. You could be having a normal day, and next thing you know, you're sitting down next to a Super Bowl record holder. All-time record holder.
Yeah, no big deal.
With two rings, Willie Parker. He's a Super Bowl record holder, Jones.
I'm aware, yeah.
Amongst numerous other records that he holds. Willie, thanks so much for coming to talk to us.
Thanks for having me, man.
What's going on with Willie Parker right now?
These days, I'm coaching a youth football team. Coaching my son. He's six, and I'm just giving back to the youth and helping them in any way I possibly can.
Does six-year-old Willie Parker's son, does he have some of the Willie Parker in him? Does he got the speed? Does he got the wiggle?
You know, I'm not even going to put that on him right now. He's the main thing. When I ask him when practice is done, I ask him if he had fun, and he tell me yes, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
There you go. I don't even know where to start. We got the Tar Heel time period. We got the Steelers time period. We got Super Bowls. Where should we start, Adam?
Let's go back and start at the beginning. How did Clinton High School Dark Horses, one of the best nicknames in all of North Carolina, how does Clinton Dark Horse star Willie Parker end up at Carolina?
It was a few things. We had some moving, some different parts just moving in. And one big reason, or I wouldn't say big reason, I'm a Tar Heel. I was a Tar Heel since I was born. I was born and raised at Tar Heel. So one main reason, or I say an important bridge was this lawyer in Clinton. I used to visit him every Friday. I visited him.
You weren't in trouble, were you, Willie?
I wasn't in trouble.
There's some people listening to go, I visit the lawyer regularly too, but it doesn't end up that way.
It was a different visit. I used to visit him, and he was super, super genuine and super, he was willing to help me in any way he possibly could. And he's a Tar Heel alum, and he just pretty much convinced me this is where I should be. And even in my mind, I was a Jordan fan, and I always bled Carolina blue.
Right.
Like, Carolina T-shirts, my family, we just had just Carolina. Carolina Duke was the biggest game of the year. And so, leading up to coming here, oh, man, Mr. Griffin, he was just an amazing guy, man. He used to put newspapers in front of me, read this. He used to coach me up his way. And at the time, I didn't know he was coaching me up, but he knew to be a part of this prestigious family, you have to have some type of, like, you know, direction.
Right.
And so he directed me, he positioned me to be a Tar Heel.
All right, before we go any further, Willie, you got to give me your workout routine right now, because I know you can't see it because it's an audio podcast. Willie Parker's jacked. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you that right now. Willie looks like he could go out and get 25 carries for the Steelers this Saturday or this Sunday if needed. So give me the workout routine, Willie.
I do a lot of I guess
some bicep work, the curls for the girls. We got it.
I say do a lot of full body movements.
There you go.
I love running. I love doing stadiums. I love doing,
yeah,
you know, things, just being agile and moving. I don't like going in the gym and just blowing up, you know. It looks maybe deceiving, but there's no way I could take 25 carries right
That's
now.
That's what Adam does. Can't you tell? Adam just goes in the gym and blows it up.
Some words I've never said. I love doing stadiums. When I walked out the door, Willie was here, and he called and said, I'm here, and I walked out. I was like, I don't see Willie, but I see Bruce Carter.
Yeah, that's right. I see Ty Chandler. I see a current Tar Heel. That's got to be him over there.
What's Gio Bernard doing here at Pod World Headquarters? So you were a Tar Heel to start. Were you always a football guy to start? Did you play other stuff?
Oh, I played basketball. I guess my parents had me. I'm not going to say I guess. I know my parents had me in basketball. They had me in baseball just to keep me off the streets, keep me and my brothers off the streets. Back in Clinton, there's nothing to do, so you can really get involved with the wrong crowd really quick. So they did a great job of keeping our mind, you know, occupied.
What is it about Eastern North Carolina? Because as Willie knows, I, too, am an Eastern North Carolina guy. What is it about Eastern North Carolina that produces such great athletes? Because there's some dudes that have come out of Eastern North Carolina.
A lot of dudes.
Yeah. I mean, we got
so near with two of them.
We got two of them
right
here.
Right here. Facts. You a dude too, Adam.
Central North Carolina, what up?
But Eastern North Carolina is where it's at, in my opinion. But from my perspective, I just think there's nothing to do down in the eastern parts of North Carolina.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not...
You're not trying to say anything bad.
I'm not trying to say anything bad, but when you just have sports and sports can be your way out, and you can focus and concentrate and you don't have that many distractions, I think you can make it happen. And that's what the Eastern North Carolinians, we really do. We try to make it happen.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you have friends who weren't as into sports and got into trouble in other ways?
Of course. Of course. And they let me know early that's not what I want to do. In and out of jails and in trouble with laws. My parents used to give me examples quick. Like when I was young, they used to, see, I told you he wasn't right for you. I told you. And then it started clicking. As I got older, I started staying distant from certain, still love them. But you can love people in a way where you don't have to be around them all the time, you know? When you see them, you can, you know, talk, catch up. But you don't have to be around and do what other people do just to show them that, you know, you're friends.
Was that hard?
Very, very. It was hard, but in a way, like I told you, my mind was like, you know, it was focused on, you know, being a Tar Heel.
How old were you when you figured that out? Because there is a time where that seems cool.
Yes, that's a great question, actually. But if I were to think, I think it was early because my daddy used to beat the brakes off.
You had some help.
I had some help. Like, it wasn't just me making my decision on my own. No, my daddy used to snatch me up, man. Oh, man.
That's how Willie got to be fast.
Hey, yeah, that's right.
So, you know, you're going to make some mistakes, but he was right in my face, like, hey, okay. No, so, yeah, that was early. But I don't know a particular age, but it was definitely an early age, because all I remember now is just playing sports since I was six.
Sure.
Yes.
When did you realize you were faster than most people?
I would say around 14, 15. That's when I started arriving. That's when I started really working on my speed. But when I wasn't working on my speed, I was just, average.
This is a legit question. How do you work on your speed? Like, I mean, how do you get faster?
You have to run fast. that's what was told to me. They like, if you want to be fast, you have to run fast. So do speed workouts, running fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like working out. If you want to get stronger, you have to go lift heavy weights.
Well, that's why I'm not fast or strong. I've solved that problem. So you get to Chapel Hill. You get out on the practice field with guys from all over the country. What'd you think? Did you think this is where I belong? Or did you think, oh, these guys are pretty good and fast and strong?
I definitely thought this is where I belong with all the blue, the sea of blue. I loved it. But at that particular time, me personally, I wasn't used to being around people that was better than me, you know? I'm not trying to say anything bad about the people in high school or middle school, but I always felt I was the best. And so that was the first, like, opener. Like, hey, you work on your speed? Now you have to work on something else. And all I was used to was just working on my speed. And now I have to work on something else. And then you have to go to class. And then you have to go to study hall. Oh, man. I was like, how can I work on myself? I'm going to be tired. And I was tired. I did that for a few. And then you just got to get the hang of it. So to answer your question, to be around here, how I felt when I arrived on campus, and I was homesick. To be honest, I never went anywhere. Like, I never traveled. We traveled to the lake, beach, but it was never away from my parents. My parents always been there.
So what'd your parents tell you when you called them and said, hey, I'm missing y'all. I don't know what to do.
Oh, they hung up the phone. They
said, Willie, we done too much work to get you there. Yeah. We're hanging his phone up.
Oh no. They're like, oh, you got to be strong. You got to go out there and find a way. You have to figure it out. Like, that's why you're in college. You have to figure yourself out.
So what did you feel? I think it's fair to say your time, a little rocky. You had great moments. I know there were some tough moments too. How did you figure it out?
To be honest, I don't think I did. Me personally, don't think I did a great job at figuring it out, because I will always regret my college days. Have fun, great college, met some great folks here, great coaches, great teachers, not teachers, professors.
Sure.
Great professors. You know, I always will regret not putting my all into being a student athlete. And that's something that, I know you didn't ask me this question, but that's something I will always instill in my children. Like, I know what I did, and that's where I feel, I wouldn't say fail, but I would say I got defeated in that area, my student athlete, being a student athlete at the University of North Carolina. And I always took the easy way out. And growing up, like, I was taught, never take the easy way out. No, you stand over here. I know you want to go out here and hang with your buddies, but no. Like, that's not where it's at. And I didn't have that guidance. Or I just say I never grew up in college.
In what way do you feel like you didn't put your all in? Because it's not like you were skipping practices or something like that. But as you look back on it, what do you feel like you could have done more of?
I could have done more of, like, meeting, you know, talking and finding regular friends, like, in the student body, you know, and getting different, like, you know, getting different perspectives, listening to different views on certain topics, you know, instead of just being football, you know. Like, I'm trying to make this, like, transparent as possible to y'all, like, so y'all can understand, but it wasn't just, you know, I know one point in time when I was younger, when I was in college, I was about to graduate. I was blaming everybody in the world for me not playing and all this. But at the end of the day, it's just you. It's you and you. Like, you wake up, you have that battle with yourself. It's like, you, if you're on the field, it's about effort. If you don't give effort, you're not going to play. In the classroom, it's the same thing. Like, if you're not putting in enough effort and time in those books, you're not going to get the grade or the score that you want. So I would say both. I didn't do a good job of giving the effort in the classroom. I didn't do a great job of giving more of what was asked on the football field.
This Willie Parker we're talking to today is like 60 years older than the last Willie Parker I ever. The last Willie Parker I talked to over there at Keenan Stadium after a practice sometime, that was Kid Willie Parker.
This is wise Willie Parker.
This is wise Willie Parker who's going to educate everybody.
Well, I was going to ask you, when did you, because you don't, I mean, look, Willie Parker's a Super Bowl champion. He went on to do everything he wanted to do. So you don't even, you could sit here and go, whatever, they didn't play me enough at Carolina. That's their fault. Like, when did you come to this realization or understanding that you didn't think that you did what you wanted to do here?
Oh, that's a great question. It had to be once you won that first Super Bowl, I made that first Pro Bowl, or maybe a little before that. But I don't know the time, but I know when I looked myself in the mirror, I was like, you know what, you know, you having a lot of success these days. Let's bring it down a little bit, you know? So you kind of tone it down a little bit.
Sure.
And then you look at what got you here and what could have went another way or another direction. And I just looked at things that I could have done. Even though I'm here with a great team, winning the Super Bowl, and, you know, having a lot of success with this great team, I could have had the same success here at University of North Carolina if I would have done some of the things that I was doing at that particular moment with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, can I say I have a personal beef with you, Willie?
What's
can
that?
We air it out right now?
Air it out.
Do I need to leave the room? Because Willie's about to tear you up.
Yeah, that's right.
No, beef. It's none of that.
So
I love.
I have no facts to back this up, but I feel like when Willie was playing was the first time that the players would introduce themselves and say, like, I'm Willie Parker,
yep.
University.
It was.
And Willie wouldn't say Carolina for a little bit.
It was.
Willie, that hurt my feelings when you wouldn't do that.
And, you know, at that particular moment, I was bitter. And, you know, when you're young, and I was actually an adult, like, I was out of college, but I still consider myself immature. I was immature at that particular stage, and you know, at the end of the day, UNC has been nothing but great to me. They gave me an opportunity, and that's all you need in this world is an opportunity. You get an opportunity, you better take full advantage of it. And I didn't take full advantage of it, and I was blaming everybody but myself. So when that day I started looking at myself in the mirror and you know, started really putting things in place, and like, you know what? Like, this what I cannot happen to my younger kids, you know, my kids growing up. I had to coach them up, you know, the right way.
So if, to use your words, you didn't think you took the opportunity, how'd you get another one? Like, how did you then say, how did you then become the Willie Parker that we know from the NFL?
Another great question. You have to really, like, believe in yourself no matter what. Even if you feel something is going a way that, you know, that you feel isn't the right way, I mean, you have to believe in yourself. And I always believed in myself, even when I wasn't playing here at UNC. Even when, you know, at the highest of highs, I always never stopped believing. And even to this day, I still believe in myself like no other. Like, I mean, I guess that's about being an athlete. You have to believe in yourself because at times you're going to have some bad, some rough, like, patches. And,
yeah.
And you're going to have to overcome those rough patches somewhere or somehow. And I've always been used to overcoming, like, rough patches or rough areas in my athletic career.
If John Bunning was sitting in here, what would you say to him?
Oh, I love you, my brother. Oh, 100%. I spoke to John, Coach Button, respect. I spoke to Coach Button a little after, what was that? I want to say it was something with football, something with NFL, and he was out there. And they told me he was out there. And I went up to him, and I apologized, and you know, we just chopped it up, you know. And him being the bigger person, I mean, I don't know if I could have done the words that he spoke to me after somebody bashes you or, you know, because this is a career, like, you know, people, their resume is all that they have, like, moving forward. And he just spoke words. His wife embraced me like no other, you know, Miss Dawn. And if he was here, he know it. I show him love and give him a hug because I was immature. Like anything I ever spoke about that squad when I was here at UNC was all immaturity. So, and I take full blame for that.
All right, tell us a little bit about being a part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, such a historic franchise, so much success. You're a big part of that success. Just feels like that's one of those programs where it's like, man, this is different to be a part of the Steelers.
Before I speak on the Steelers, I want to tell you what it was like being a part of the University of North Carolina.
Yeah, let's do it, Willie. Let's do it.
Man, it was great. It was great being here. I loved it. I loved every moment. At the time, practicing and all this stuff, I still love football, so I love going to practice. Even though I didn't feel I put my all in and gave it my all or put a lot of effort into it, I would just say meeting those guys and being teammates with a lot of those players that some of them didn't even go on and play in the NFL, but the other guys that were just, you know, there every day, like, hey, man, we had losing records. And it's hard coming in at a college locker room, losing records, and having in your mind it's a possibility you're going to lose this upcoming week, you know, playing Florida State. But we always had a strong brotherhood, and I will say I love being a Tar Heel.
Do you still keep up with any of those guys?
Yes. Me and Jock Lewis.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Clay Robinson, you remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those guys, we really cool, man. And I hang with them a lot, and I talk with them, FaceTime them, and, you know, I don't know why it's just us, but, you know, it is. It is what it is.
Well, obviously, the best-looking guys are hanging out together.
Yeah, that's what, just like on this podcast.
That's right.
The best-looking. You know,
Willie Parker just surrounds himself with greatness all the time.
Good stuff, man. And I like this greatness right in this room.
That was at a zero before you got here, just to let you know. Mac Brown's made a big push to have the Carolina football family, football lettermen, be involved and feel part of the program. Why do you think that matters?
Oh, it matters, man. Matt Brown, he's doing a great job at reaching out to a lot of the older athletes and bringing them back in. Like, it matters because the younger guys get to see the older guys and be like, you know, oh, these guys right here, they one of us, you know. We have their support. Like, and once you get that support, like, stamped, or you get that stamp from the older guys, like, hey, y'all doing something out here. You know, that means a lot. You know, when I was playing, we didn't have that. We didn't get that approval from the older guys that came in and played. Like, if we would have got that approval, who knows, you know? It just changes everything up. They have some energy over there, like a lot of energy. I know we just came off of a loss, but they still have energy. Like, as soon as they get it right or get everything connected, I think we're gonna be on our way. But I still don't think those two losses. I wish we were 3-0 right now, to be honest.
So you were here about 20 years ago, about yes. That time.
Holy cow!
Don't
I know? You say that anymore.
I know.
Everybody my age.
I know. But like when you see the practice facility that they have now, I mean, can you just how different it is now compared to then, even though that wasn't that long ago. When you're looking at that, are you like, man, I wish I had been able to. Can you imagine just fast Willie Parker running up and down that field?
It's amazing, man.
Yeah.
It's very amazing. Even this building right here. Like,
I mean, yeah, so
everything
different.
Everything has changed. And man, I wish it's just a dream.
Now, where are you now? Like, where do you live?
Oh, I live out here off of 751.
Okay, so you live in the area, yeah, so you're nearby.
Yes.
Nice. So you can come. So Willie could be our co-host here maybe once a week. We just bring him in.
They call this building the Jones Mahal.
Yeah, that's
Jones
right.
Mahal. That's good stuff, man.
Yeah.
So you show up at Pittsburgh Steelers training camp, mm-hmm. and you're not just a rookie. You're an undrafted free agent rookie at Pittsburgh Steelers training camp. Mm-hmm. Where does that put you on the totem pole exactly, and what's that like?
If we had 99 players, I probably was the 99. That's the totem pole right there. The last player in the room, you know? Like, that's how I go.
Mr. Roethlisberger, do you need me to carry your shoulder pads?
That's something of that like nature, you know? So going into Pittsburgh Steelers, being undrafted, and I was just another number, another jersey, you know, going to get you out of here, not even looking forward to, you know, if you can do something to help us out on special teams, that's a bonus. but they weren't really looking for like players like that was undrafted to be on the roster.
So how did you do it?
By the grace of God, believing in yourself and just a great, you know, a great organization. Like they saw something in me, and I just went every day just working. And I also, every single night, I prayed. And somebody listened to me. Somebody heard those prayers, you know, and they were like, this kid's serious. He's serious. He's for real. And I think that's a conversation that was going on with the man up above and whoever, the gods or whatever, because it definitely happened.
Do you remember a day coming off the practice field or something somebody said to you when you thought, I think they've noticed me?
Well, what happened, it's funny you asked that question, Coach Cower, he came up to me in practice. And he was talking to me. I never see this coach talk to anybody, not even coaches. Like, he's really stern and he's really hardcore. And he came, he was talking to me. And, like, now what he was saying, I'm not going to repeat it, but he was talking to me. So I just was really, like, shocked that he was talking to me out of all these players. You got Jerome Bettis, you have like Deuce Staley. So I'm like, they taking notice. I got to keep doing what I'm doing, plus more. So he talking to me. So a coach came up to me, grabbed me on my shoulder, like kind of touched my shoulder. And I turned around. He's like, look, I don't know what coach said to you, but he's watching. If you see his everyday move, you don't see him talking to anyone. So when he talk to you, take heed. Keep doing what you're doing. And keep, what else did he say? Keep doing what you're doing and don't stop, or something like that, or those words.
What was it like? What was your relationship with Jerome Bettis like? Because I have to imagine when you started to have some success, was he threatened in any way, or did you guys work together and work well?
Oh, we worked well. He definitely wasn't threatened. He was a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
Like he's not worrying about a little undrafted free agent. I don't care how much success I was having. Like, no, he always kept his smile. Even before I ran my first touchdown or scored my first touchdown, he was there, like, coaching me up, like, telling me, you know, hey, I know what's on your plate right now, but make sure you get in your playbook. This is what you have to learn. Learn this concept. Before you go to this, like, he used to coach me up. Like, and he used to show me the Steeler way. Like, before I even scored my first touchdown. But he also did that to other people. So they were taking notice and you know, and pulling me and embracing me. And, you know, you're here now. So you have a shot.
What's the Steeler way?
The Steeler way is passing it on to the next man. Like, giving them the blueprint, showing them how they're supposed to act on and off the field. Like, you know, you have to really be a professional. You can't go and get in any trouble. They'll get rid of you. Like, they definitely will cut you. They don't tolerate. It's a zero tolerance policy of getting in trouble, and mm-hmm. they don't bring troublemakers in. And a troublemaker might not be a troublemaker, but they might voice their opinion a lot, like over the media. The Steelers don't really, I guess, invest in those type of athletes.
You can't keep playing in the NFL if you don't put your all in. Because, like you said with Coach Bunning, it's a business, and if you don't want to put all in, they'll find somebody who will. There's a million people who want that job. Who do you feel like showed you how to be a professional?
I would say Jerome Bettis. I would say Hines Ward. I would say Deuce Staley. It was a number of them. Joey Porter. It was a lot on defense as well as offense.
Those some good teams. Just really naming those guys makes you remember how good those teams were.
Yeah, and that's what made us, you know, like, come together as brothers, because they used to do that to undrafted free agents. Like, we used to go to a restaurant for dinner, and the rookie dinners, oh, man, the rookies have to pay for everything. But, you know, if you are a rookie, you undrafted, how you gonna, you're not first round draft pick. They'll pull you to the side and they pay for it. But it looks like you paying for it, but they pay for it. And they did that for years. I used to rent movies in my hotel room. So they put you up in hotel rooms and stuff until a certain time. And I used to rent movies. I thought we could rent movies. I thought this was our home for right now. So Bill come out. I was like, all right, this is going to be my whole signing bonus. And the things they do, man, they just embrace you, man, and they take care of stuff that they know. Like, once they feel you genuine and you can fit in and they're still away, they'll take care of you. As long as you're not no little butthole.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they'll take care of you and they'll bring you in right.
What's the most embarrassing thing you had to do at a rookie dinner or, like, in training camp as a rookie?
I used to really try to get away from all those guys every day. I knew they was coming after me. So, but the most embarrassing thing, have family, it was like family day. They used to make us stand up in front of the families and sing. But this was like traditional. So I knew you couldn't get by that. So it really wasn't even embarrassing at that particular time because I knew we had to do it. So I'm practicing. I had to practice stuff like that. I had to stand up in my room, practice. I just what I was saying, you know. But it just, if it was the team, it wouldn't have been as embarrassing. But since they had kids, they had, like, their family, their mother, like, you know, and it's just a lot.
What'd you sing?
I don't remember.
I don't know if I believe that, Will.
It was a few others that stood up too, so okay. We all singing, and I necessarily wasn't the lead singer. Like, I back doing, I could have been back.
Yeah, you were the backup. Chorus, you're like the Supremes back there. Yeah,
the noise. And the funny part is how they do it. They catch you off guard. They just start ringing their like plates with their forks and their spoon. And like, I'm like, oh Lord. And if you're a rookie and you inside the lunchroom or the cafeteria, You got caught. Now, so you try to hurry up out of practice, hurry up, get dressed. Sometimes not even like take a shower and just go over there, get your lunch, and go back to take your lunch to go and get back in the room. But sometimes they know what you're doing. Once they catch on, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to be over there waiting.
But you could just say, hey, man, I got to get back to my movies. I've rented like a dozen of them.
Yeah,
I did, but they nah. That's training camp. That's in training camp. Like, you living in the dorms, but, like, during regular season, well, preseason, that's when you go in the hotels.
Do you remember your first touchdown?
Yes.
Well, who's it against? How'd it happen?
The first touchdown was against Tennessee Titans. I had a great day. It was a season opener. And we had some great folks. Our offensive line, oh, man. I love running behind those guys. So they made it so easy for me. And I used to tell them, I was like, oh, just come celebrate with me when I score because it's about to happen. And I used to tell them this and I know they used to, like, just listen to me. They never used to say anything in the huddle. But I used to tell them, like, that's how good they were. I knew the holes, how it was happening. And then Jerome get in, and he plow them over. So now they tired. I get back in. I can tell they tired. I'm like, there's no way they can catch me. Like, you know, the line, Jerome, he just pretty much deletes the defensive line. Pretty much. That's what he does. Like, he deletes them, and probably the Mike linebacker. Like, after tackling this guy over and over and over, it's brutal. Like, so, again, one of them just running a tad bit slower, it'll be a long day. And it was a long day. So my first touchdown had a screen, but that wasn't a touchdown. What led up to the touchdown, I had a screen, probably my first play, took it like 50, 60 yards, then ran like two or three runs after that. It was probably about a 3-yard score. But the feeling and the emotion that came with that touchdown, knowing my career or my student athletic days at the University of North Carolina, my playing days, that's an even better word. My playing days at the University of North Carolina, it was just a lot of emotion. And, you know, it just like I was releasing a lot of that emotion. And it was an amazing feeling. And my parents was there. I had a lot of family that attended the game, so it was amazing.
Did your parents tell you after the game, "See, we told you not to hang out with those other guys, and look where you are"?
I wish they would have told me that. That would have been a nice moment.
So when you are running by everybody and you're in the open field and you're going in to score 50, 60 yard touchdown, whatever, what's going through your mind? Are you looking at like the video board? Are you just running? Are you thinking anything? Well, what's going through your mind when you bust one of those?
Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. but that's pretty much what I be thinking. Touchdown. Like once I break the first level and I see that it's one man coming at an angle, in my head it's a touchdown.
Does the game move slower?
It don't always necessarily end up that way, but in my head, that's what I'm thinking.
You got to think the best. Yes.
You got to.
Does the game move slower for you than it does for me? Like, is that how you get through the first line? Guys slow down like it's the Matrix or something, and you can see these things?
Now, I heard Le'Veon Bell say that once about how the game is slow to him, and like he can just pick and choose. It was never that way to me. Even though I consider myself super fast, I just felt that if I get a step on you, you're going to have a long day. You're going to have to be pretty fast to come and catch me. But I never thought the game, I thought it was super fast, actually. You know, so I guess that's just my thought process. Maybe I should have thought, hey, they slow. The game is slow.
I think what you did worked just fine. From the outside, Bill Cowher looks like a scary guy. What's he like to play for? What's he like as a coach and a person?
At first, he was a scary guy. At first, he was, he's very down to earth too, but you have to gain his trust. And once you gain his trust, I think he still can be scary when you gain his trust. But he's more of a, he embrace you and he know what you can do. But if you mess up, he's still gonna let you know you messed up in front of the team. That's a great coach to me. You know, like you don't have favorites. He never had favorites. I see him curse Jerome out. I seen him curse like his assistant coaches out. I also see him in another way of loving on everybody that he cursed out. Like within, if it wasn't that day, it was like that next morning. It was never like I'm up here, I'm the leader, y'all down here. Like, you know, and I think that's a great sign of, like, leadership.
What did you take from that as now a parent and a coach? Because I think it's a talent to be able to get that mad at someone and have them understand that it's not personal. Some people can't do that.
Facts. And that is about being a parent as well. You can't get that mad and just close everything out. You know, you have to be open to everything. You have to sometimes go in that person's head or get in that person's head and see what he was thinking when he did whatever he did or whenever that child done whatever he's done or she's done and kind of sympathize, you know? And I think being a great leader, whether you're a head coach, whether you're the president of the United States, whether you're a parent, I think it goes hand in hand. Great question.
Can you believe Ben Roethlisberger's still playing?
Oh, man. Man, I watched Ben this past weekend, man. I was just, I was looking at IG and he was like, it was Ben, he was falling and throwing a ball and nobody was around. And my son was like, aren't you going to like that? Aren't you going to like that little post? I said, no. I like, no, that's my brother. I never do him like that. Like, no. To answer your question now, man, he's been playing a long time, and yep. It's a blessing to be playing that long. And he always been a great athlete, and he's going to end it like his way.
Yeah.
And he deserved that, you know, to go out how he want to go out. You know, whatever it is, however he want to go out, whether it's winning a Super Bowl or however, him still playing this game of football, man, it's been quite some time because he came in when I came in.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you mentioned the Super Bowl. Like, so you've, no big deal, Willie won, of course, two of these. When you're in the Super Bowl, I mean, was there a moment where you're like, holy crap, Willie Parker's in the Super Bowl? Like, I mean, did you ever have that moment or were you just playing?
Oh, no, you definitely have those moments. The Super Bowl every time. And they have the Super Bowl set up, so you will have those moments. Hmm. Like all the events and everything. You can't get by that. And especially if you took the road that I took to get there, by those events and by those daily activities that they had you doing, it's no way to overlook it. So every single day, whether it was the first or the second, I always like appreciated every single moment. Like I got back to my room and I almost like, if I didn't cry, I was on the verge of like, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like, it's truly an honor just being a walking testament that you can do whatever you want to do in this world if only you believe. And that's part of it. So, yeah, man, I used to be in tears, man, to answer your question. Like, every single day they have events. Willie Parker, we need you here. Willie Parker, we need you there. It was just an amazing feeling.
Out of all the people who've played in the NFL in the history of the world, nobody's ever had a longer touchdown run in the Super Bowl than Willie Parker. 75 yards. What do you remember about that play?
Oh, man, I just remember me telling my offensive line, meet me in the end zone.
from your own 25, you told them to meet you? It's going to take them an hour and a half to meet you in the end zone.
Almost every single play I used to tell them to meet me in the end zone. And from the first time that Tennessee game, the season opener, until my last play, I always told them to meet me in the end zone. And at first, they used to laugh, like, right out. And then, like, towards, like, once I gained their respect, they're like, okay, we there. So, yeah, but what that play was like, I just seen the hole open up, and I was saying, touchdown. There's no way they can catch me. Touchdown, touchdown. Like what I said earlier, it's a touchdown. And nobody caught me, and that was all she wrote, man. Alan Faneca put on an amazing block. That offensive line, like I said earlier, by that offensive line, and I know we had some different parts with that Super Bowl offensive line, like opposed to my season opener, but both of them was good. But that Super Bowl offensive line, they was gritty. Alan Faneca, we went over to play at halftime, and all the entire first half I was overrunning the play because I was trying to make things happen that wasn't necessarily like supposed to happen at that particular time. So we went back and we went over the game plan, and they pretty much showed me why we were doing this or why you can't run it this way. And once they slowed me, and that goes back to your question, is the game slow? But once they slowed my thinking down, my mind down, because again, it's a Super Bowl, I'm undrafted, and I'm appreciating every moment. I'm like a kid in a candy store with all my favorite candies. and that's how I'm feeling. And so I'm overrunning everything, doing things that I wasn't doing leading up to the game. But once they slowed me down, they were like, look, go back to Willie week one. Go back to Willie week 10. Go back to Willie, hell, right before the playoffs. Or go back to Willie the opening playoffs. Like, go back to that guy. Like, slow it down. Like, man, slowed it down. Alan Faneca kicked this block out. And, oh, man. That was an amazing feeling. I didn't even know it was a Super Bowl record. My offensive linemen, they came to me. We celebrated a little bit, and then I knew something was going on, but I didn't know what, because it was like the game was pausing, and the commentators was coming like on our sideline, and I didn't know, and then they told me, so.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say something. Oh, no. So
you seemed like you was in the moment, right?
Yeah,
I was. I was picturing it.
You just ran the 75.
I was. Be in the end zone, Alan Faneca. Take us to the house.
You was in the moment.
I was.
I like that. How did it feel?
It felt better hearing you describe it than it did when I watched it on TV.
All Adam's thinking is touchdown.
Touchdown.
All right, Willie, before we let you go, and this has been awesome, dude. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Looking back, if you could give us a 30-second the Willie Parker story, like from Carolina to the Steelers to now, like what's this ride been like? Like what is this journey that you've been on from that young dude in Clinton to now sitting here with us today? Like what can you sum it up for us?
I would say it's been an amazing journey of challenges. And I love challenges, and I love to overcome challenges and then restart another challenge. So the journey, I think it was how it's supposed to be. I really think I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. You know, coming here, let's say I would have had a lot of success at UNC, which I do regret, which I would love to have and celebrate more with my Tar Heel Nation. But let's just say that happened. And then you wouldn't have, let's say that happened. I had a lot of success at UNC and then didn't have any success or didn't even get any trials in the league. Like, you know, so it's a lot of, like, you know, different elements. And I would just say challenges are the best. Like, just challenging yourself and along the journey, you got to throw some challenges in there. They have to be in the works. In order to grow, my growth is making me to this day. Now I have an organization, 39 Legends Foundation, and now I'm going back and helping the youth out, doing stuff throughout the holidays, turkey giveaways, showing up at people's door for Christmas, giving them smiles, you know, and it's just an amazing feeling. It's a challenge, another challenge that I put in front of myself. But this challenge is more of making somebody or someone else or another family smile, bringing smiles like through the holidays and stuff. Like, so with the journey, it was an amazing journey. What was it like? Fun. I was immature half of the journey, found maturity, still finding more of it. Man, it's all love. I loved every moment of it and still loving it.
Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for right around 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field, but doing so with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel, so put down that phone while you are driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more and find an agent near you, visit trustedchoice.com/goheels. Fast Willie Parker, Adam. What's going through Willie's mind when he's out in the open field? Touchdown.
Hey, guys. Meet me in the end zone.
I love that. And how he said at the beginning, they all laughed, and by the end, they were all on board.
Hey, Willie ain't joking. Meet him in the end zone, Alan Faneca.
Adam, how about your list?
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
A lot of good contributions from listeners this week. I mean, really, there's great contributions every week, but today especially so. Want to remind you to check the video pod this week. A lot of good memes that we got that people went in and edited what quote-unquote Miles sent out, a frame from the video pod. A lot of good work there. Really proud of all of you. And we'll share some of our favorites this week. David Cameron tweeted at us a picture from the Notre Dame-Cincinnati game. Some sort of device that had the brand name Laser Down on it.
I see it, yeah.
I think that's the digital down marker thing, right?
Ah.
That's child's play technology, really.
Big win for Cincinnati.
Yeah.
In that game.
Great use of technology as well. So I don't think they've stolen our idea. And if so, they're clearly not utilizing it in the best possible way. Did you happen to click on Mr. Goosehawkers' YouTube video that he sent us of the song from 1982?
No.
It's really something.
Should I put some of this song in?
Yes.
Okay, I'll do that right now.
So that is the Fabulous Friars, and the song is Here We Come, New Orleans. Mm. I've never heard of this song, but in the comments, several people mentioned that they vividly remembered this, and they had recorded it off the radio in 1982. And
is this a Jim Hefner, Tar Heel Sports Network specialty, or is this something else?
I think it's something else. I think it, because it has a picture of the actual record.
It says produced by Johnny Howard.
Yeah, old Johnny. And somewhere in Tennessee, right?
Yeah. I don't know that part, Adam.
I think it says that on the record or something.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. I don't remember. I've never heard this song, but it's a humdinger. I know that. Jones, we wanted to mention that today is marks the two-year anniversary of Forever Tar Heels. That's the program that the Rams Club is doing, championing women's sports at Carolina, which, of course, are incredible. Strongly encourage you to be part of that program and, of course, to be part of the Rams Club, ramsclub.com.
And it's the 50th year celebration of women's athletics at Carolina, right?
That's year long.
Yeah.
So you'll be hearing more about that as the year progresses, I'm sure. I wanted to get your thoughts. I'm just going to read this tweet word for word.
Okay.
And I want to go to my crypto expert to get your thoughts on this. So this is from Darren Revelle. The lowest price original Genesis, only 1,000. I think that means like only 1,000 exist. Cyber Kong is now $575,000. They generate 10 bananas a day.
What are you? What words are you saying?
So those bananas for an original holder are worth about $200,000 based on today's digital banana price market, $95 a banana.
Of all the stupid things of the words that you're saying, and of all the stupid things in the world, and there's many. The fact that you just gave me the price for digital bananas is at the top. I don't even want to hear the rest of the tweet.
Price to buy one of these in March, $15.
Who's buying them? And who's setting the market for them? This is all... It's all a fantasy, Adam. You know what? I mean, it's just like... I've said this before. Like, I'm holding this pen right now. You know how much I pay for this pen? Probably like a dollar. I now say this pen is worth $1 million. Who wants to buy it from me?
Digital bananas.
Stupid.
So someone bought the gorilla. What does that even mean? The Cyber Kong, sorry. For $15 in market.
What is the Cyber Kong?
Now it's worth $575,000?
According to who?
Darren Revelle? And the Cyber Kong makes bananas? And then people buy the bananas?
Somebody get Kane Ma on here. He can explain this
Jeb
to us.
Terry.
Jeb Terry.
Jeb Terry's
Kane Ma.
Got a whole bushel of digital bananas.
Yeah, they can tell us what all this means. It's honestly, dude, like I feel like there's just a group of people who live in San Francisco who are all just doing this and like high-fiving each other and laughing about it. And none of it makes sense.
I know you're up on this, too. The CryptoPunks are going nuts, though. Like they're selling for over $1 million.
And it's a picture, right?
I think. And there's ones that sold like 3 months ago for like $1,000, and now they're selling for $1 million.
To who? Who's buying them?
Idiots.
Who is buying them?
I don't know. We'll have to call Jeb Terry.
And why are they buying
harvesting
them?
His digital bananas.
They're just buying them so that they can say that they have them and they're worth this much? But then what do you do with them? You sell them in 3 years, I guess?
I think you just let your Cyber Kong produce his digital bananas.
Please move on. You're angering me.
That whole tweet sounds like something that a robot would generate while you were teaching it to...
Yeah, that's right.
Speak
like
English.
It just made up words
right.
That went together somewhat.
Did you see the robot in the Missouri halftime show on Saturday?
No.
It's a little creepy.
What did it do?
It danced around with the band. Mm. And it was.
I've seen the virtual reality Panther or whatever they have at the Panther games.
I don't understand that. So is that real?
No, Adam, there is not a like 20-foot Panther that is mauling Bank of America Stadium every Sunday.
But there is a Panther statue.
Yes. But I think. So, but you can only see it on the video board, right? I mean, it's not like you're seeing it.
I don't think so. Why did everyone act like it was a big deal? It's just a cartoon panther. I've seen that. I saw that on Looney Tunes.
Yeah. It's...
But everybody acted like it was so cool. Why is it cool? I don't get it. I have had this conversation before with my son.
What did he say?
He wasn't sure.
He needs to be our... We need to start getting a segment with him to keep us up to date on what's happening.
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you this. I'm about to really bring you up into 2021 right now. Well, let's go to the world of TikTok. Are you aware of this frat guy from Carolina who has completely blown up on TikTok and Armando Bacot just did a dance with him?
What do you think the answer to that question is, Adam?
You're big on TikTok.
I am not aware of this gentleman.
Okay. The whole thing is that he's a terrible dancer. That is the complete extent of his claim to fame. And he's regularly getting...
Get in line, bro.
2, 3, 4 million views on TikTok for these terrible dances.
Yeah, I'm serious. It's about time to cut. I think it's just about time for me to cut bait and just be out on all this.
And he's become a campus celebrity.
Like, honestly, dude, I honestly think it's just about time for me to fall back into my chair and just go, this isn't how it was when I back in the day. I honestly think it's getting close to that time.
His name is Briggs.
Congrats, Briggs.
Briggs, good job being a not good dancer. A lot of people updated us on the Florida man and the gator.
We did get a lot of updates on that.
I want to thank James Lake, Troy Rayner, Ben Howell. Ben sent us an email and said the local man was interviewed by one of the Orlando news reporters, and I thought this was some really good insight that helped us learn more about how we could do this in the future when we encounter these gators. His name is Eugene Bozzi.
This is the guy that captured the gator?
Yep. He is a military veteran and a dad. While he's only been in Florida a year, the native of Philadelphia felt an alligator's power up close. Quote, Eugene, somebody's got to step up and do something. We all got to look out for each other, right? He told WESH Channel 2. I was frightened when I had it in it, because it was so powerful, and I didn't expect that. It was pushing out, whipping its tail around.
Look, I'm not going to mess with Eugene, but I have to say I would have expected that.
Right, like what did you expect? Denise Sparks says the six-footer, I think she's talking about the alligator.
Yes.
Was in front of her Orange County home, and she had no idea until she heard the commotion. Quote, Denise, I would have been gator food. I would have fainted, she said.
I'm with you, Denise.
I said, what in the world is going on? I heard boom, boom, boom. And clearly she was like, that's the boom, boom of a gator. And Eugene. Once the gator was in the trash can, Eugene quickly maneuvered it down the embankment toward the retention pond, pushing it over and hightailed up the hill. Quote, Eugene, army training kicked in. Get it done. Dropping it in. Keep moving.
Yeah.
He said.
I like you, Eugene.
Orange County tweeted out people should call the state's nuisance line for alligators so a licensed trapper can take over. Eugene says, I don't know the procedures, so I did it my own way.
Look, Eugene didn't have time to go through his mental checklist of the proper government-approved steps to take care of this gator.
Eugene is stunned by the attention he got after the video went viral. I got so many inboxes, DMs, women saying things, men saying things, people that I do know, friends, he said.
Yeah. Adam, since you're doing local news, can I do another one?
Sure.
Did you see that we were sent this? Oh, who sent it to us?
Shane Casita.
Yes. Woman charged with felonious grits attack.
Yes.
Florida woman behind bars for allegedly striking her boyfriend in the head with a saucepan, quote, containing freshly cooked grits. Investigators say Dereese Johnson and the victim were arguing yesterday morning when she struck the man with a metal saucepan inside the couple's residence. Contained within this pan was hot grits, which spilled on the victim, causing a burn to his left arm. Watch out, grits. I mean, versatile.
It sounds like a fun story until you really get into it.
How large were those grits, I wonder?
Hopefully not big. Last thing on the list, Son of Odell sent us this important news from Variety. The ultimate director's cut of Rocky IV is coming out. It has a whole different title, Rocky V. Drago, the ultimate director's cut. 40 more minutes of never-before-seen footage. One night only in theaters, November 11th.
What a night.
No better way to celebrate Veterans Day.
Yeah, that's Veterans Day, right?
There's going to be nationwide screenings, which will also include a Q&A with Stallone and a behind-the-scenes look at the film's creation. So you better go ahead and get your tickets now. Oh, it will be available to rent on demand beginning Friday, November 12th.
I'm a man of my word, Adam, so I changed my Twitter picture.
I saw that. I don't see any jeans hiked up to your knees in that picture.
Well, remember, I said that was the backup one.
Oh, I thought that may... you're right. You did say that. I was only halfway listening.
Yeah.
So we're never going to get to see that one because it was too little.
If you look at the video, Adam, that was retweeted on Monday, I go through some of the ones that didn't get chosen. Now,
it's
again,
like your own director's cut.
Yeah. I can't say... Now, I didn't do the final cut on the video, and have I watched it? No. But I was in it, so I know what it said. Like, I don't need to watch it. I
was misquoted in my autobiography.
But so, picture's been changed up there for a week. Started on Sunday. It'll be up there through Saturday of this weekend. Then I may just change my Twitter picture for good. We'll see where it goes after that. Adam, I have a very short, how can you justify that for before we call it a day?
I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done?
How can you possibly justify that?
So I was driving to the game on Saturday, Adam, and I get to an intersection with a stoplight. Now, game was at noon. We were on the air at 11 o'clock. So in this scenario, I'm going to leave 2 hours to 90 minutes before we go on the air. Left at 9:13. So perfect, like right in the window of my acceptable time of when I can leave and comfortably get where I need to go with plenty of time to spare. So I get to this intersection. Everything's going great, Adam. And I noticed that the stoplight is out at this intersection. Mm. Not like off, but flashing.
Right.
It's doing the flashing. And I thought, oh boy, well, this isn't good. But then, Adam, my concerns were alleviated because the highway patrol was right there. There were three highway patrolmen right there. And I was like, oh, okay. Light went out, or maybe they turned it off to help with the traffic or something. But they're here. They're here to direct the traffic. Everything's going to be just fine. Adam, that was not the case. As the minutes began to pile up and my blood pressure began to rise, I noticed that something wasn't quite right. And I'm telling you, the line of cars on both sides of the intersection that were getting the flashing red, it was stacking up incredibly. It looked like that game you play on your phone where you're trying to move the cars into the right spot of the parking lot, you know, and get them all lined up in the right colors. It was deep. And so I was like, what's going on here? And I kept thinking, do I want to turn right and then swing around? But I figured if I did that, right when I did that, it wouldn't go right. So eventually, Adam, I roll down the windows. Because I had seen these highway patrolmen go up and speak to some folks already. I thought, well, all of this is very strange. Like, what's happening? Meanwhile, people are getting out of their cars, walking around. It's like when the power went out that time when I was in Harris Teeter. And I took all the salad dressing and I ran. So the police officer, highway patrolman, comes up to the car. I've got the windows down. And he goes, hey there. I was like, hello. He said, we're just waiting for the Duke team to come on through here. The Duke team, Adam. Now, when the Tar Heels are on the road for football, they too get a police escort. A lot of teams do this. However, the police escort, at least the police escorts I've been a part of, Adam. You get to the intersection. The police skillfully block the intersection. And the buses go on through. Never, at least not to my airtight memory, have they changed the actual lights for the police escort. So this is totally a foreign idea to me. Two things. One, I tried to pull the Carolina radio on him to see if that would work. And I said, oh, well, you know, I do the radio for the Tar Heels. I got to get moving here soon. And he said, oh, all right, they'll be here in a second. You want to know how long I sat at that light, Adam? 17 minutes, Adam. 17 minutes I sat at that light. My question is just this. I've never organized a police escort, so I don't know the procedures. But like Eugene,
I just do my own way.
Like Eugene, I just do it my own way. I would not change the lights for the police escort. If I did change the lights for the police escort, I don't think I would do it 17 minutes before the police escort was coming through. Adam, that light could have cycled 14 times in those 17 minutes. And finally, then, this is the part that really got me. They turned the light back on, and I thought the guys hadn't done it right. Like, even when he turned it back on, it stayed red for another 2.5-3 minutes. And I thought, what is going to happen if this light never turns green? What will happen? Fortunately, eventually, we got through and everything went fine and the Tar Heels beat Duke, so ha 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 ha. But 17 minutes, Adam, I sat at that light.
Did you have that brief moment while you were sitting there of wondering, what if the Duke team bus isn't coming?
Right. What if they delivered the football jumping out of the airplane to Wallace Wade Stadium instead of Keenan Stadium? It's happened before. What if they just are going a totally different way? 17 minutes. Why would you change the light if they were still 20 minutes away?
And they hadn't even left the hotel at that point. The guys were about to depart.
Were other lights changed? I don't know.
Yeah, were they red all the way back
to
the highway?
I don't know. I do know about 10,000 cars went past me during that time period. Going on the highway past me. So, I want to get to the bottom of this, Adam. I know somebody I can talk to who knows a little something about the highway patrol that can help me out with this. So I'm going to see if I can get this answer. We'll find out.
If there had been a roundabout there, this would have never been an issue.
And here's the other thing that really got me, and then we'll get out of here. After they had changed the light back and it was sitting on red, like the two state troopers were still right there. Because trust me, I thought about going. I'd be like, well, I'm just going to go. But then I was like, I can't just go.
Right.
That would just be an extra kick in the pants.
Right. So they turned the lights back to regular and then went over and stood on the side.
Well, one guy who changed the light left, which made me nervous because I thought he had changed it and done it wrong, but then he left. And then these other two guys are on my side and just sat there in their cars. To the point where I started like turning around, looking at them, doing one of these, like going palms up on my teammate. Like, what's going on here? Everybody? Don't we want this light to work? Anybody?
Did they do anything back?
No. They said, he's Carolina Radio. We respect him. That almost changed my mind, but not quite.
I'm Carolina Radio. I need to get to the games. Well, all right. The bus will be here.
Yeah,
the
bus will be here
bit.
Shortly. Just a mile or two away. Okay, Friday, Florida State preview. Another great guest. Who knows what else? It's Friday. Everything's loose. Adam, anything else before we go?
No.
Okay. For now, we're going to let Willie Parker, Fast Willie, and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Willie Parker. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.